from the creators of The Shape. CCC Entertainment Group presents a nostalgic fan film series. Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees, Fred Krueger, and many other iconic horror icons from the 80s and 90s converge in a universe we've all been waiting for. The Horrorverse, Season 1. Available now on YouTube. Awaken the darkness.
Welcome to Around the Reel with your hosts, Aaron Carlson, Charles Lawson, and Samantha Hanna. Ah, shit. Here we go again.
It's all good.
Hello.
Well, there he is. Hi.
Technical difficulties, but it'll work out.
Oh, it's fine.
Here, I'll tune in your audio for you.
Chuck was rubbing his tits, and we were talking about whether or not I'd find him attractive if I was a female. And, just... normal conversations we have, Logan. This is
That makes sense.
Yeah. Real guy talk.
Yeah. It's like what I fuck Chuck. I don't know.
Well, not again.
And on that note, welcome to Around the Reel.
Welcome to Around the Reel.
How you doing, buddy?
Great. How are you guys doing?
I think I'm doing good. It's a lot going on, but good. Yeah. Chuck, how are you?
I do well.
I'm not unwell, thank you.
Yes. Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, we're doing all right. Unfortunately, we don't have Sam tonight. She's not doing very well.
Bummer.
Her back is just destroyed. So last week, she hurt her back pretty bad, her sciatic. And mm-hmm. She's been like on a roller coaster. Like some days she does well, and then some days she's a piece of shit. So today is one of those days where she's like, I really want to be on this one because we're talking about writing and she's a writer. She loves talking about it, but she's also not in the best of places. So she wanted to apologize to you, and everybody else out there. So sorry, guys, Sam's not here. So you just got me in check. Fuck.
And our wonderful guest this evening.
Yeah, and Logan. Logan will carry
or the afternoon
show.
Or morning or whenever you watch the show.
Yeah. Or listen. In fact, our numbers on the podcast platforms are tremendously going crazy compared to YouTube. And it makes more sense to me because when I listen to podcasts, I listen to them. I don't watch them. You know, if I sit down and watch TV, I'm watching a fucking movie. I'm not watching four people on the screen talking. That's just me, though. However, some people like that. I don't know. But it feels more like radio, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah, when you're doing shit around the house, you can listen to it. You know, if you're driving down the road, you can listen to it. It works better. Anyway, the show's doing well. I'm surprised. I thought after we took our break, it would take a dig. It's not. So, in fact, it's actually going better. It's like they missed us or something.
Yeah, you took just the right amount of break for people to desire more.
And what was cool was I saw the numbers spiking on a lot of the older stuff that they may have missed. So they were going back and digging. So dig away. Cool. That's awesome. Anyway, enough of that. That's housekeeping. So,
dig away.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have you back, brother.
Yeah. Good to be back.
Well, back with us, not back. You know, back, but back to the back of the being back.
Back on the reel.
Back on the reel.
Yeah. Last time I saw you was from behind.
That's true. Yes. That is true. It was a bloody good time.
It was a bloody good time, wasn't it? Dude, you were so good in that movie. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we have Logan Cannon with us. Logan, go ahead and introduce yourself, and we'll start chatting with you.
Hi, how's it going? I'm Logan Cannon. I was Frank in Jason Voorhees, Awake in the Darkness, Episode 9 of the Horrorverse, which was a blast. Had a great time. I've been doing a lot of acting this last year and doing a little writing. And I thought it'd be fun to kind of talk about writing since I was in something you guys wrote. And hopefully we'll be in more of stuff together. So
absolutely. All right. What do you think, Chuck? Should we have Logan back?
No, let's just go. Let's go. I'd rather go eat something. Hi, Logan. How you doing, buddy?
Great. How are you? And how is everything? Actually, speaking of you, I listened to you, the podcast centric on Chuck. which was great. That was really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, Chuck's been through a lot. Yeah, and he shared it with everybody. He didn't fuck around. So I was very proud of you, Chuck, by the way.
Yeah, it was really simple. You can hide from it or you can deal with it. And I like to always try and deal with shit.
Yeah. Why is my name?
Even if I take a minute to figure it out, but still.
It takes less time to figure it out if you face it, though. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Yeah, and you did. You did do that, Chuck. You really did. It took you a minute. You pissed everybody off, but you did it.
I only pissed a few people off.
Yeah. Yeah, you did.
No. Some people would have empathy.
But this, oh my God, let's not start on that. I'm glad Sam's not here. Jesus Christ. Okay. So, yeah, Logan, just before we start getting into the writing aspect of the show, let's talk about you for a second. So,
okay.
We liked you from the beginning when you were on our last show. And Sam was saying to me, you know, we got Logan Cannon coming on. I'm like, who the fuck is Logan Cannon? Who the fuck is he? And she's like, oh, he's I seen it real. He's great. He's looking, he's doing these movies and he's getting back into this stuff and he's really kicking ass. And, you know, he super wants to be in like horror stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, that's cool. So when we got you on the show, I immediately got the vibe from him. So I couldn't wait to see you act, really act and work with you. And when you got on set, and you started pulling Frank out of your ass. And I had a feeling you would based off the table read. But dude, you carry those scenes. You really do. You really do. Everybody that watches that shit that I know that I've spoken with always talks about your character and how badly they wanted your motherfucking ass to die. It was so good, dude.
Yeah. That's what I was going for. You know, you wrote somebody who needed to die and I tried to just bring him to life.
And you really did. Isn't that the irony? I didn't even think of that. Yeah. You brought him to life for us to kill him.
Damn,
you couldn't have done it any better, dude. Just the mannerisms, some of the expressions you made, the tone in your voice, just your eye lines, everything was proud of you. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
On.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. It was a lot of fun. And you you inspired a lot of people on set, too, and that's important.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
You sure shit did.
Awesome.
And you took it like a man when you had to go back and get more blood.
Yeah.
Can you get a little something like right here? Just more right here so it flows all down here.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's
took a while to get it out of the chest hair, though. That K-Row really, really sticks in there.
I was wondering, what did you think of Steve Eaton's effect on your death? How did you like that?
I thought it looked great. I was kind of amazed. You know, it when people started doing those digital like blades and gunshot wounds and stuff like that, like, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
They just were awful. And they never like matched or stayed in the same place. They kind of floated. And
yep.
I thought he just nailed it on that one. It really looked great.
Solid. Yeah, Steve's amazing at it. It's crazy, and it just reminds me of like when I watch John Wick movies, and I'm like, okay, that's all digital shit they're doing. It's all digital. All the blood bursts, all the gun hits, all the knife wounds. It's all digital stuff, and you're just like, wow.
Yeah. I mean, they wouldn't in something like John Wick, for example. If you had to set up all of those practical effects for each shot, you could never film that elaborate of a fight scene because it's going to take 4 or 5 takes to get it.
But, yeah.
And that would be 4 or 5 days if you had to set up those practical effects.
Yeah.
So
it wouldn't work. So, you know, that mastery of that gave us the confidence in Steve to go, Steve, if you pull off John Wick shit with your digital effects, we got this. We got this entire series. You know, we love practical stuff too, but for efficiency, like you're talking about, you know, that's where it comes into play. And when you're on a budget like we are, it's kind of like that practical shit's cost a lot of money to fucking do all that.
Definitely. Yeah. And you know, when you can do it, you guys got great masks, great heads, you know, fun stuff like that. There was blood on me.
Yeah.
But, you know, having a machete burst through somebody, that's a lot more work.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we couldn't do it the other way. But
not to mention just getting enough stuff to mold your chest piece. Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That would be a lot.
Yeah. And speaking, since I was talking about having sex with Chuck, what would that be like to mold Logan Cannon? I'm going to put myself in that mode for a second here.
A lot of Vaseline, otherwise all the hair is coming out with the mold. So, speaking from experience of having my head molded before, a lot of Vaseline.
Man, I don't know if I could do that molding thing. I'd get claustrophobic. I'd freak out. I don't think I could do it.
It was hard having my face done. It was because I'm pretty claustrophobic too, and you just got straws in your nose and just covered, and you can still hear all the people around you talking and making jokes, and you're just stuck there hoping it'll screw with you.
Dude, what if you have to sneeze? Like, what happens? What if you have to sneeze or cough?
You gotta start over.
Oh, the straws come out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck that. That'd be brutal. All right.
See, every time you pull my mold off, it would look like this.
Knock that off. I'm sorry. I can't help it. It's my natural face.
All right, man. So you be acting, and we know that now. But I had no clue that you were going to be, like, doing some writing. And unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to read the script. But I know Chuck did. He started reading it. And he hit me up today, and he's like, bro, go ahead, Chuck.
I don't know. How much do we want to talk about?
Well, let's talk about the script. How do you feel about what you read so far?
Whatever you feel, man.
I feel like bouncing on the ball. no, I got about half. I got about halfway through. So yeah, dude, it's fun. It's. I mean, the best way I was trying to explain it to Aaron earlier. It's like this when he said you sent over something to read and it was like a comedy. I did not realize what it was until you sent the artwork with it too, and I was like, oh. Well, then I start reading the script. I'm like, this is like a Western style Ash versus Evil Dead almost kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. So far, what I've written, that's great. I just so you know where I'm at, I just finished the flashback. I don't know if there's more than one, but I just finished the flashback.
Okay.
For the main character.
Gotcha.
Very cool.
So, okay. Great.
Well, Logan, why don't you talk to us about what the script is that you're working on, and give us some points of like that we can talk about without giving too much away. I don't know where you're at on that. So, like, what do you want to talk about with the screenplay?
Well, as Chuck was saying, it's kind of a Western, Ash versus the Evil Dead, or it's I kind of like to liken it to, like, if Tombstone, the town of Tombstone or the town of Deadwood, became where Dawn of the Dead happens, and everybody has to, like, shelter in place and survive zombies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of bringing that together. And I came up with the idea many years ago in college, and I actually wrote a short version of it, and then I expanded on it over the years. So it was originally just like a 20-page thing, but I actually had, like, I had it, the pages synced up to, like, music of every scene when it would happen, and, like, when bullets start flying, like, it hits this beat in the music. I really had it planned out. But then I expanded on it, made it a lot bigger, and I always thought it would be fun. You know, most Westerns have a lot of action, a lot of shooting in it, and so do most zombie movies. So it's like, why don't we have a zombie Western yet? This should happen.
Yeah.
So I put them together. I tried to have a lot of fun with it, being a huge fan of Westerns, as well as zombies. There's several lines and scenes that are direct homages to Westerns that I love. So, I just tried to have fun with it while still, my idea in writing it is to play it as a serious film. Like, nobody's in a comedy. They're in a survival, a zombie movie, just happens to have some funny moments, which every good action or horror movie should have. So,
very nice.
Absolutely. Well, since you made such a comment on the Westerns, what's your favorite Western?
Tombstone is definitely up there, but I also absolutely love Silverado. It's one of my favorites. Great movie. But even more recently, in throwing that horror genre in there, I love Bone Tomahawk.
Yes.
That movie's amazing.
I just watched that a couple weeks ago with my kids because they hadn't seen it. We were looking for a horror movie. I'm like, trust me, guys, this is a horror movie. They're like, Dad, it's a Western. I'm like, trust me and just watch this shit. Dude, from right away, they were like, what the fuck? I'm like, right? Okay, keep watching. Dad, is that Jack Burton? I'm like, yeah. Isn't that the guy who plays Snake? Yeah. Keep watching, motherfucker. Hey, is that what's his name from Insidious? Yeah. Keep watching. Is that the dude from Scream? Yeah. Keep watching. I mean, think about everybody. That cast is loaded. And that's a great fucking movie. That is great.
Great performances, too. I mean, that's what gets me about that movie. Is it if they didn't have the opening scene and they didn't have... If they just played out the middle part where all the guys are going after the dude's wife, that's such a great Western. I mean, that's like Big Jake or something. You know, that's
exactly
it's all story, and the characters are so well done, and you feel so much for everybody in that movie.
Yeah,
and it's very much kind of the feel I want with mine. It has moments of like startling and moments of gore, but you also I want people to really care about the characters, so it matters when somebody dies. Correct. It's not nobody's a throwaway. Like, everybody's got a story and a purpose, and they're important.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that style. And that's why our horror movies, or the one you were in, gave time for the characters, you know, so you can get to know them a little bit. Hence the episodes prior that we did, you know, the shorts, to give somebody some kind of, you know, background on everybody so that they could connect with them before we just slaughter people. You know, it's just like, I'm so tired of that. I enjoy it. But I don't care. I start rooting for the villains all the time. It'd be better if I rooted for like some of the characters that are pushing the story along, right?
Yeah.
That matters. Yeah. It matters. Yeah. That's a treat when a writer can do that.
Yeah. And I think having read the next episode, episode 10, I think people are going to be surprised at how well that exact thing happens in the next one too. That script has a lot of, you know, great hero moments, great moments where like you really care about the characters because you find out what they care about.
Right.
And I really enjoyed the 10, the script for it that I read. So
good for you. Good for you. Thank you, man. And I'm super excited for that one too, just because of that reason. It's like, without having a threat, there is no horror. And threat, I think, comes from caring. You know, we feel threatened with our families if someone's trying to get in, because we fucking love them. Well, why do we love them? We spend every fucking day with them. We know these people, right? We know them inside and out. If somebody's coming to our house trying to break in, that's scary because of what could happen to those people we care about. And I think if you can acknowledge that in any story you write, it's going to make the movie better, bottom line.
Yeah, definitely.
Totally agree. I'm glad you're doing that. I didn't know you were a Western fan, though. That's fucking exciting, because I've been wanting to make a Western forever. And the only thing that throws me off is if I can't find a Western town or a saloon or a whorehouse or give me something, I'm never going to make a Western. I'm not going to make it, because I just don't want my cowboys running around in the woods. I just can't have that all day long. I need a fucking town. And that's kind of stopped me from writing the script I've had in my head for, fuck, check how long, 15 years, maybe longer?
Longer.
You know which one I'm talking about. Yeah. I got a cool idea for a fucking gangster ass goddamn cowboy movie. And I just want to make it so bad. And it's fun to see that you're just writing it and just doing it, because I think I'm holding myself back because I think I can't get a town. Yeah, you know what I mean?
It should never stop you from writing it.
I know, right?
Write your fucking story.
I'm a pussy. Yep. I don't want to write it and love it and can't make it.
Just shut up and write your fucking story. You can adapt it later when you turn it into a screenplay. For now, write your fucking story. I mean, I was doing the same thing. I'm reading, I almost said Frank. I'm reading Logan's shit, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, just the fucking wardrobe and the fucking silicone for the body parts alone is going to be so much money.
Yep.
Not that it's my problem.
It never stopped me from writing what I wanted to happen in the script.
Good.
I've written scripts with the thought of, like, how can I get this made?
Mm-hmm.
So write it as simple as possible, which sometimes those restrictions can make something even better.
Right.
But this one has always been, well, like I said, I'm 40. I wrote it when I was 20, the original, like, 20-page version.
Mm-hmm.
10 years later, I pulled it out. I wrote a 60-page version. I didn't even pull it out. Actually, I, all those years later, the computer I had written it on completely crashed. I had nothing of the 20-page version. So I wrote a 60-page version just from my memory.
Okay.
And then last year, I actually wrote it basically to what it is now, which is a feature length. It would probably run in the neighborhood of 80, 90 minutes. And it's what I would make if I had, you know, a medium budget. It wouldn't even... This is not a $500 million movie or anything. You could make it a few million dollars.
Right, right.
So.
Yeah. It'd be fun. I'm excited. I need to read it now. I'll get to it. I'll try to start it maybe this weekend and just hammer it through. And I'll I'll let you know what I think, too. I know I'll love it. So I don't really give notes. I'm not a note guy. I'm not that. It's like I read stories. I read Iris Script not too long ago. I don't have any notes for that story. It's a great fucking story he wrote. It's awesome. I'll read yours, but I feel the same way. I don't give notes. It's like when we're making something or doing something together and we're all there, I think that note thing comes in when we're on set. That's just the way my brain works. Yeah. I know everybody's different because nobody fucking knows what's going to work or what doesn't.
No.
Everybody has their own perception of something. And, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, okay, this is what I wrote. Let's go try to make it. And then when we get out set, you're feeling that vibe and you're feeling the people. And somebody says something about it, and you're like, you know what, that will work better. And then you do it. That's a good note right there, live, right on the spot. Let's change that right fucking now. That's kind of how I like to do notes. But I do think they're important, though, because there's certain things that, you know, as a creator, you can miss.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. And having that second and third pair of eyes, even though they might say some notes, and you're just like, oh, fuck you. Get out of here. I'm not gonna change.
Yeah, but the fact that they gave you notes made you think about something.
Yes.
Even if something completely different than what the note is, it might make you see it in a different way.
Right.
And realize, hey, what I wanted to come across didn't. I need to change something.
That's absolutely right. And if you can justify the notes and you're like, I know it's because of this, and this, and then you can kind of let that one go, you know, and you let one go. But if you can't justify one and you hear the same note from like a few people, it happened in the movie that we're doing the documentary. There's one moment in the movie that was a little jarring in the doc, and one person said it and another person said it that watched it, the screener, and one other person said it. I'm like, okay, that makes sense, because I kind of felt that way too, but I convinced myself it worked when I was editing. I did. I was like, okay, I know why it works for me, but I don't want the audience to feel that way, right? But I had multiple people tell me, and then I'm like, okay, yeah, we need to change that and fix it. But they're important, but not always. Not every little fucking thing. Yeah. You know,
I usually don't give them unless somebody asks.
You know? Well, that's
if they want them, great. But otherwise, I'll just read it and go, I liked it, or I'll go, it's a script.
Yeah,
good job, right?
Keep writing. Yeah, keep. Good luck. Okay. Let me get back to Westerns real quick, though. Real quick, because you guys said your fucking favorites. See, I have... I didn't say shit. What's your fucking favorite, Chuck?
The Brother.
No. Yeah, I figured...
He pointed at me when he said so.
I know.
Oh, Chuck.
Yeah, I know. That's your favorite. See, I have a battle with Westerns, because I'm like an old school Western guy, too. So, like, Outlaw Josie Wales is still one of my favorite fucking Westerns, right?
But great one. Pale Rider's great.
Pale Rider's great too. But then, you know, Unforgiven came out and I'm like, Jesus fuck Christ. They're questioning killing people. This is fucking great. Like, how does it make you feel as a man to kill somebody? That's a fucking sad ass story. It's brutal.
Yeah.
It's fucking brutal. Definitely. And it's brilliant, right? Across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Tombstone, how do you not love Tombstone? That's just badass as fuck. But there's one that no one ever talks about that I feel like I'm the only one that likes. Because it's a remake, but I fucking love the remake for 310 to Yuma. I fucking adore that movie. Yeah. I cried my ass off in that movie for Christian Bale's character. I was bawling watching that. And with Russell Crowe doing what he was doing to get his fucking back the way he did. Dude, it gives me chills talking about it. I love 310 to Yuma. That's like one of my favorite fucking Westerns. Bottom line.
It's that whole thing. Not only in that movie do you care about the Christian Bale character, because everything he's doing for the right reasons.
Yeah.
And he's kind of gotten a raw deal for trying to do the right thing.
His entire life, he got fucked.
Everything's going down. And much like, I'll go back to Unforgiven in a minute too, but in that one of the great things in the writing is Russell Crowe is kind of who you're seeing the movie through And because at the beginning, like the first time you see Russell Crowe's right-hand man, what's the guy's name? Ben?
Yeah, he's great in Emancipation, too. I love that actor. Always
He's great in everything.
Yeah, always
great. But Russell Crowe's character is like, you know, that's my guy. It seems normal. But by the end of the movie, you see that he sees how out of whack and crazy that dude is.
Fucked up.
And how, okay, this other guy is more in line with, like, I have principles. Yeah, I'm a crook and blah, blah, blah. But I still have something going on. Yeah. This guy does not. But Christian Bale's character does, and he deserves something out of this for everything he's put into it.
Yeah.
So, you know, if...
It questioned his morals, and it was badass.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. I love that. And one of the great things about Unforgiven is the person who enjoys hurting people and killing people is the sheriff. And the person who doesn't want to hurt anybody anymore is the killer.
Yeah.
So, right. You know, it flips that whole idea, you know, and you kind of wonder, you know, why did the killer do it initially? And was he always conflicted about it, or did that happen at some point? You want to know more about him, you
yes.
want to feel for him. Whereas the sheriff, you just feel like he always liked hurting people, and he just found a way to do it legally.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Great stuff. And those stories are so well made most of the time, where you just, there's so many layers to them. That's the thing about Westerns when they're done right. They're just great. So I can't understand why they're not made more. I know they don't make money like the big blockbusters do, and that's probably the problem. Yeah. But fuck, they're so good. They're so goddamn good.
Another great one, great two, more recently, Open Range. I love Open Range.
I've never seen that.
Kevin Costner. You got to see that. And Appaloosa, also fantastic.
Okay.
Viggo Mortensen.
God.
And Ed Harris. And Ed Harris directs Appaloosa, I believe.
Oh, shit. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're the two main characters. Phenomenal. Mm. And Lance Henriksen's actually in it, too, in a small part. He's great.
Dude, Lance, he's still making movies? Dude, he's no joke. Yeah,
he's looking old these days, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
When the last time I seen him? Yeah, but I still remember him in Pumpkinhead, goddammit. He's badass.
Great movie.
There was a picture of him in the airport with him, Michael Biehl, and...
I saw it.
Somebody else. Dude, it was just like...
Yeah, he looks old. Yeah. I was like, it was like a Weekend at Bernie's. It would look like a Weekend at Bernie's picture. It was really bad.
You know, people get old. It happens.
Yeah.
He's been doing it a long time.
He sure as fuck has. That's crazy. Okay, let's talk about some writing stuff.
Yes.
Because that's fun. That's fun. I mean, we got your story now. We got the pitch. How did you get started writing this stuff? Like, what do you do? What's the way you do it? Your process?
My process? So usually, I usually start to imagine scenes in my head. I think in film. So, like, I see a movie in my head. It's the way I think. So usually what happens is, like for this one and most of the things I've written, I see the highlight scenes that I really like, and then I write to stitch those together to make that story come together. So like I'll have like, okay, if the character was introduced this way, it's going to be super cool and it's going to look amazing and it's going to be like impactful. And then if they have like, on the other extreme end, this is the climax of the movie, and it's going to look amazing. It's going to again tie in that meeting from the beginning. Well, I just have to write the middle stuff, which isn't as fun, but I have that thing to like jump off that exciting scene, and then I write to the next scene I'm excited about, and I always try and have an ending that I really like the idea of, so that I always have that momentum to run to. I have a finish line. I don't think I've ever written anything without knowing what I want the ending to be, because I would just lose steam. I gotta have that end.
You have
that
goal. Yeah, you're the finish line, the goddamn touchdown. You need that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm similar. I'm similar in that way. But I've written in different ways. But I'm not a technical writer, you know, per se. You know, I don't outline anything. I've never done that. I might write bullet points for certain sequences that I'm doing, you know, like just reminders. But other than that, no, I don't outline my story. I don't do any of that shit. It's almost like when I get to, I have moments like you do, you know, I'll have something in the beginning, something in the middle, and maybe an ending that I'm trying to get to. And I just watch where these characters are going when I'm just sitting there doing my thing. You know, it's almost like I'm watching the movie unfold. I don't know what they're even going to say most of the time. I have no idea. So that's the fun part of writing to me. I don't want to do it any other way because I'm watching the movie in front of me unfold. And I'm like, holy shit. When I get to the end of it, I'm like, oh God, we made a movie. It's cool. Here it is right on paper. Now we got to go fucking do the work.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So technically I'm kind of like you. I don't do all that prep either. I just let it bleh, come out. And I always say that it's like a garbage draft. Just get it out. You know, you just vomit it out. Yeah. You just get it out. But everybody does it differently. And that's fascinating to me. Cause I see a lot of technical writers, like, you know, people I follow or people I've watched, like are in the industry, like big in the industry. And they do a lot of technical stuff prior to writing something. I'm like, Jesus Christ, that didn't even look fun. Why I couldn't do it. But what about you, Chuck? I know you've written the script, you know, how did you write yours? Was it similar to us or you do something different?
Well, like for me, like when I wrote Say Goodbye, I wrote while I was on a journey. So I was actually thinking of what I was going to write. When I stopped, I started writing. When the vacation I was on, when I started writing, I was actually writing two scripts at the same time. That's Life, which was the comedy that I wrote the first, like, I think 10 or 15 pages for. And then when I got to my destination, I just started continuing to think about this storyline. And I just sat down and started writing. I sat down and started writing one day, and Aaron called me in the morning. And then he called me again during the day, and he's like, oh, I'm so sorry I didn't call you during lunch. I'm like, what fucking time is it? I was gone. I was just immersed in the writing. And I had the whole entire story in my head. I just don't type fast enough to keep it up. But like a couple of stories I'm working on now, I mean, I had a dream for the beginning of my storyline, which is a guy basically packing up back of a car and getting ready to head out, takes his garbage cans to the curb and all that kind of stuff. You know, I had that dream, and that was the beginning of the story, and I knew the end of the movie. So now I just have to write the middle.
Just like Logan does. Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Logan. Sorry.
Well, interesting thing with that is if I'm writing my script, that's the way I do it. But I've also written stuff with my brother, which I think I talked about last time.
We've
written a couple of books together. For those, it's usually a lot of bullet points from him and sometimes kind of a rough outline. And then I kind of write his scenes together, or like I'll throw out a scene and he'll say like, okay, well, maybe we can fit it in this chapter. And so for him, when I write with him, we do have a little more outlining and bullet pointing and stuff because it's not just all in my head, obviously.
Right. Right.
You know, you kind of got to work that way with other people sometimes, especially if you can't be in the same place at the same time, which, you know, I took a lot of writing classes in college, which taught me how to do all that stuff. But I never do it for myself. I only do it when I'm working with other people. So
because your bullet board's in your head.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like I said, I see the movie, like I don't need to bulletin board. The script's in my head. I just need to put it on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. I feel that way when I'm filming stuff. That's why I don't shot list all the time or have storyboards. They're in my brain.
I wanted to ask you about that when you're editing, especially a documentary. To me, I mean, that obviously a documentary generally is not going to have a script.
Nope.
It'll have some ideas. It'll have some interviews. So basically you're writing it as you edit it, kind of.
Yes, Samantha will have an outline based off of all the footage that we've gotten from the source. So if we go out and shoot a doc like the one we're working on right now, we went out for 5-6 days total for that documentary to film. And you have no idea what you're going to get. You know, you have an idea, but you don't know what people are going to say. And some of these things go in different directions sometimes that, you know, people have different things they say that you didn't expect. So, and Sam's really good at taking what she's then heard and changing and altering her timeline or her outline for me. Then she gives me the pages for the outline, and then I sit down and I start digging through that footage and finding those those points that she has and trying to piece together this big puzzle that, you know, she says will fit, you know. So the first time I started editing the doc, the Giant Pacific Octopus, I had no clue what to do. Like, I literally started it. And I'm like, what do you think of this? She was like, yeah, it's good. It's good. And I'm like, okay. And then I let it sit forever because I was just like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I don't, there's none to script. And then she gave me an outline. She's like, here, take this, fucker. So I grabbed it from her. I'm like, oh shit, you wrote this down. Where was this at? She's like, I just wrote it because you were struggling. I thought you understood what I wanted. I'm like, I didn't know. So she gave me all these pages that she had outlined. So then I sat down with that and I started looking through it. And then all of a sudden, dude, I got it. And by like the 20 minute mark, it took me like a good month, maybe 2 months almost, to get the first 20 minutes done of Giant Pacific Octopus. After she gave me those notes, I had that movie done in 2 weeks. It was nice. Done. It was done. It was done. And I was like, holy shit. All right, thanks. So on this film, the new one she's doing, that's how we did it. She immediately gave me her notes and the outline that she had in her head. She had transition stuff. She changed stuff as we go sometimes when I get to certain sequences. But, you know, just based off things she thought about. And she wanted, hey, maybe we should go this way because so-and-so said this. And I'm like, okay. And I just make those alterations. But you're right. It's weird. I had a hard time in the beginning because every movie I've ever made was for myself. And anything I've ever edited for another filmmaker, they knew what they wanted. So they told me.
It had a script.
Yeah, it had a script. So it was easy to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, docs are interesting.
This word is missing. Okay, I can't use that line.
Yeah, but it's kind of like writing though, in that regard, where it's like I she's basically writing the script without writing the script, if that makes sense. You know, it's just flowing in front of her, and she just has feelings, and she says, "Let's do this, 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 and this." You know, and that's kind of like when I'm writing the script. You know, I had no idea what Frank was going to say when I was writing Frank. I had no clue until I got to Frank. And I got there and I'm like, oh, I know this guy. I can see him already. He's sitting there. He's just talking shit. Yeah, this guy's a prick, you know. And then you're talking about what we're like writing with your brother, which is great because now I'm writing now with Steve, you know. And I did a collaboration with Chuck, too, on episode 10 because episode 10 was started by Chuck. He started writing that one. The opening sequences, I don't know how many pages you wrote, maybe 10, maybe 15.
10 or 12, yeah.
Yeah, something like that, you know. And then Chuck had a lot going on. And he's like, hey, man, just finish writing this for me. And I'm like, okay. And I took over and then I wrote the rest of it. And then I'm like, okay, well, let's get Steve on it. And then I go, Steve, polish this bitch up. What do you think? And then Steve jumps in and he starts doing it and he'll make changes and he'll write some extra stuff. And I'm like, nah, I don't know. You know, some things we X'd out, but other things I'm like, I like what he did there. But what if we do that and then make it go here? You know, and that starts happening.
Yeah.
Is that how you and your brother kind of do it?
A lot of the times, you know, it'll start out with well, and it's kind of funny, we kind of have an unspoken agreement that whoever had the initial idea for the script, they have the veto power.
They got veto.
So so if it was my idea and we're writing it together, if I don't like his idea, I can just say no.
Yeah, and he can't get butthurt about it.
Same deal in reverse. Is if it was his idea originally and he says no, I don't argue with him or anything. I'm just, okay, we'll do it different and we go with it. So that kind of helps settle the dispute.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it.
Neither one of you just sit there, you know what the fuck you're talking about?
No. Not many years. Plenty of times when we were younger, we said that.
Well, yeah.
But there's, anymore.
I think there should be a natural, obvious respect there for the creator's vision, right?
That's
definitely a no-brainer. And if anybody tries to trump that, they're out of their mind. That's just ridiculous. Chuck, I read Say Goodbye. Did I ever tell you to change anything? No.
Yeah, your character.
Well, I wanted to play a different character, but I didn't say change your script at all. I know that was what you wanted to write. You wanted to write something, and you wrote it. I'd be happy to help you make what you wanted to write. You know, I mean, no problem. But it's
so
funny.
Say Goodbye. Tell me about Say Goodbye. I'm kind of interested because I've read some Aaron stuff now. I've read some of stuff that you've collaborated on. But tell me about Say Goodbye.
Oh, Say Goodbye. Say Goodbye is a story about a man who's dying of cancer, and he's trying to convince his friends and family that it's okay. He had beat cancer before and gone through all the treatments, and now it's back and worse than ever, so he doesn't want to try and fight it anymore. He's ready just to let everything happen as it's going to happen and enjoy as much of his life as he can. You know, I no longer care about how long I live, but how I live is what matters. So,
Chuck wrote a faith-based drama, is what he wrote.
Yeah,
that
the horror guy, Aaron's like, I can't wait to see what Chuck, you're writing a script, all right? And then I start off with a comedy, and he was like, what the fuck? And when I started writing the comedy, I'm on a road trip. I'm driving. I'm halfway through California, and I'm like going through my brain, like, okay, what am I going to write tonight when I stop? And this motherfucker comes up, I got an idea for a movie. You're never going to believe it. There's nanotechnology in vaccines.
Yeah, I did. I wrote it. Yeah, I did.
And so he called me. He spent like 2.5 hours on the fucking phone of this motherfucker constantly calling me. Well, I'm trying to think of my own storyline, but it's okay. I was on vacation.
Yeah, sorry, Chuck. I get carried.
It's okay.
I like
that. But I mean, that's just it. That's the whole idea. You get excited about something. You want to collaborate. You want to talk to somebody about something. I mean,
yeah.
I get it.
And I think one interesting thing as an actor, hearing about your script, that's a script I would love to act in. There's no way I'd want to write it. It's not in me to write, but I would love to be in a movie like that.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It's powerful. So, it is. It has moments. When you read it, you will definitely cry. It's fucked up. And Chuck wanted to fuck people up. It's like Sam with their documentaries. I don't know why you guys want to make people cry all the time. What the fuck's wrong with you?
You don't want to make people cry. It's just a happy moment.
Happy moment. It's happy when you see like bullseye flipping through the air and coming down with a shotgun.
I said it's a happy bonus. People cry.
Yes.
Killing zombies is fun.
Yeah, and it's fun. And it's exciting again now, too, because, I mean, we were halfway through the movie when we had to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And then life intervened, and the woman who plays my wife in the movie was my wife in real life, and now she left. And actually, this weekend, we're doing a readings to go ahead and start bringing in some of the actresses to replace the actresses who can't return to finish. And that was what was one of the neatest things for me as a filmmaker and writing the story is the fact that how many people stayed on.
Yeah.
I mean, we started this movie. We did the auditions for this movie April before COVID.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then COVID. And everything shut down for a year. And then we finally started filming. And then things went sideways. So now we've lost the daughter, pulled up the girl who was playing the best friend to play the daughter, lost the wife. Now we lost the sister. It's like, Jesus Christ. But the funny thing is here's what's funny. All the guys who were in the movie still wanted to be in the movie. I was like, you know, even the guys, like, you know, I barely ever talked to Kevin, but I hit him up and he was like, I'll be in Montana for part of this time frame, but if we can make it work, I want to still be in it.
That's
like,
badass. Yeah, Kevin's a great guy. Yeah, I love Kevin. Yeah. Kevin's the shit. Kevin Leong is who we're talking about. He's awesome. Up here in Seattle, he's great. And he's got his own good thing going with those guys up there. They're kicking ass, making good stuff. They're making good stuff. I like their stuff. Their stuff is fun. It's fun. There was something I was going to say, and I can't remember now. Damn it.
Storyline, say goodbye, or your thing that I touched on.
I can always talk about me. No, it was about you guys. I wouldn't forget my stuff.
So another thing I like as an actor writing is I get to play every part.
So in
my mind, in my script, that I don't know if you got to the part where Edith is introduced, the little girl.
Nope, I'm guessing that's right after this that flashback.
Yeah, there's no way I would ever play a little girl, but getting into that role, like what would a little girl be doing in this situation? What would her emotions be like? What would be important to her? What would she think of? You know, that's fun. It's fun to play characters that I'll never get to play otherwise. That's why I write them.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, In episode 9, the one you were in, Sam wrote the first 20 pages of that script. She wrote that. She wrote Frank. She wrote the beginning of Frank, right?
It seems like a woman writing the perfect asshole.
Yeah, she did a great job writing that. And, you know, in her mind, it was a little boy that was there.
Timmy
was going to be a little boy. We just had a hard time finding an actor. There was one kid I wanted to hopefully get, but then he ended up going to California. He wasn't around anymore. So without having a budget, it was kind of like, fuck, that's going to be hard to get him up here. And it was like, damn. So, you know, I pitched her the idea. What if we made it a teenage girl, you know, who's just got that mouth on her, you know? And Sam was like leery about it, but she was like, hey, you took over the script. So, I mean, I wrote what I could write. You go ahead. And I'm like, okay. And that's what I ended up doing. And I think it worked just fine. It was great. It was absolutely great. And then Sam watched it. And the first time she watched it, she's like, I love it so much. I love the movie, but I just can't get that little boy out of my head still. And I'm like, I totally get that because that was your vision. I totally understand that.
Right.
And now the second time she watched it, she's like, you know, she really did a good job. And I'm like, yeah, she did. She kicked ass. She did a great job. It's a totally different character than we originally thought up. But I kind of felt like, you know, that would do the job. But when I was writing it, when I had to finish that character off, I did what you're talking about. And I didn't even know it, Logan. I didn't even know it. You know, what would this little girl, this teenage girl say? You know, what would she do? And then when Steve piggybacked off of it later and just gave me, he only changed a little bit. He added a few different tweaks in dialogue, but I think he must have done the same because that's funny. I never thought of it that way. I always think that way from like my character if I'm writing something, you know, like Bullseye, I know what I'm going to fucking say, right?
Sure.
I know Hammer because I know Chuck, you know, I get that, you know, I know Peter Anthony so well. I know what Peter's going to want and say. I know it. And all those guys. But it's interesting when you're talking about a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that. And I know Sam did it too. It's weird. Huh.
Well, that's one of the funny things too, as far as going from writing to script and to actually making the film, because the whole thing with the idea of Timmy being a young boy is we had him getting picked up by a social worker at the end of the fucking episode, so we didn't have to deal with children anymore for the rest of the series.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, that was the whole thing. And we kept that all the way up to the point to where at the very end of the episode, it's like, you know, we're going to need her to hang out for a little while. Mm-hmm. She's a witness.
Yeah, she's a witness.
And that's a great moment for the sheriff's character.
It is.
Yes.
It makes him so much more of a person. Because really, up till that point, in all that he's done, he doesn't really care all that much about anyone.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
So it's interesting to see that
better moment. Not be dead.
And another thing with that change, and something that, again, like goes back to taking notes, and sometimes you have to change things and it ends up working better. It was interesting when I first read this script, when you first sent it to me, it was still Timmy being a little boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it as him almost imitating and trying to be tough, kind of like Frank.
Right.
Whereas when it switched to a little girl, it seemed much more she's defensive about it. She's not, she seemed much more like angry and I don't know. She seemed more affected by how awful her situation was.
Yes.
Whereas the little boy, for some reason, I just didn't, in my mind, it was just like, he's just being a jerk.
He's just being a jerk. And it wasn't as comforting.
It wasn't a shell, you know, it wasn't an armor that he was putting on. He was just being a little jerk.
I agree. So. I agree. And that was her piggybacking off of Halloween Kills a lot because of the black kid in Halloween Kills. Mm-hmm. That smart ass little boy, Timmy. Yeah. That was his name in the movie.
Yeah.
But what I found too, which was interesting, was her switch in the Horrorverse episode 9, where when I watch it, I see her being very she's sitting there and she's argumentative all the time, she's combative all the time. But once her parents died, there's a switch in her and you can see it. And she's going to this guy for security.
Yeah.
And comfort, almost like a father figure now that she needs. And exactly. I think that Sheriff picked up on it as our story went on. And by the end, I think he kind of feels that way about her. And I think that was that what you're talking about, that turning point. We didn't write that, Logan. That was something that just happened.
Yeah, and it's the way it worked. It's the way she played it too. She changes her whole attitude.
Yes.
At that point, as soon as her parents are gone, and the thing is, like, you never felt like you felt like she wanted to be away from her parents anyway.
Right.
And then her parents are gone, and she realizes, I don't want to be by myself.
Yeah.
And I'm really vulnerable here. I need somebody or something. And you know, yeah, I was. she did a great job.
Yeah, she did.
She was great.
So we had that night shoot that we had that got rained out, and she was still super argumentative and trying to belittle Elias in the middle of everything that's going on that night when, you know, he strikes Michelle and everything happens. And because we called the rain out and then we went back the next night to start shooting again and we started it all over, you know, we dropped a couple of notes saying soften it just a little bit, and that's what she did. And that's
and she nailed it. She fucking nailed it. You know, and I think her standing up to Elias and saying what she said and how we blocked them with her standing still behind the sheriff. You know, it's those little subtle things, I think, if you're really in the story, you might pick up. But, you know, she had the balls to kind of say it, but she was still stuttering it to get it out.
Yeah, she was scared.
She was scared, but she still saw her parents die. And God damn it, she's not going to let this woman get killed by this motherfucker, too. Yeah. And I thought that was a great ending for her character in that arc, you know, where she could still say something and not let it happen. And, I don't think it'll work the same with the little boy now that I look at it. It just wouldn't have worked.
I don't think it would.
Yeah. It's crazy.
And yeah. Well, and that's kind of writing in the moment, too. Like, you know, like with the blocking and everything, was that in the script? I don't remember that being in the script.
Nope. It wasn't.
But, you know, you're writing it in the moment and feeling what's going on. And, you know, so the writing, I don't think, stops on the page. I think it stops when you release the movie.
Yes, I think you're right.
You're writing the whole time.
I absolutely agree.
I mean, if you write a book and then turn it into a script, that's one thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Aaron's written stories. I'm just going to make up words. I write good. Aaron has written stories for the last 30 fucking years. And so we can always go back, which I still have those discs. I will try and find a reader to try and figure out if we can get anything off of them.
Oh, for Eyeshine and Crimson Knight?
Eyeshine, Crimson Knight, and
there's one other one in there. I can't remember.
Yeah. Anyway, but to go from to be able to go from actually the whole story, because it's a lot different when you're writing a novel and you're over explaining everything.
Yep.
And that's one of the things that, you know, as an actor, maybe you'd agree with this, Logan, but one of the things that we've always gotten feedback for Aaron's scripts is the fact that you know everything you want out of the character because there's so much detail surrounding each little introduction to each character. So it's almost like he writes his scripts a little bit, not being rude by saying this, over descriptive.
Yeah.
But that way you guys know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
So this whole Dead West thing.
Yes.
I just want to mention one thing. There's a character in there, and I kind of resonate with the guy a little bit because, you know, he beats on an anvil and his name's Chuck. So, you know, I'm just saying, if you decide you want to create something here,
That character, when I first wrote that character of Chuck, he's the blacksmith in the town.
Yeah.
I always pictured Michael Clark Duncan playing that character.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, whoa.
You need a big black
He's
guy
dead, too. So I'm yeah, available.
Exactly. And he's bald. And Tandy Newton playing his sister in it.
Oh, okay.
That's what was in my brain. Never going to happen,
right.
Obviously. But when I wrote it, it was that. And kind of, I mean, I thought an interesting thing on the frontier. There was randomly often African American people that had either run away or had never been owned, had never been a slave. So I wrote that brother sister character as African Americans in this Western town because their life would be harder for them anyway there. And so the fact that, you know, that creates even a stronger bond between them. Their parents are dead. They're the only black people in this town. And so you've already like laid on layers on them so that people know what they can bring to it on top of everything.
Well, so, if you like that idea, I've got a couple of good actors that would fill those roles perfectly then.
Awesome. But, you know, I mean, I'm open to notes, I guess.
Okay, I'm going to read it. And I have...
No, fuck the notes. I'm just talking about... So when we help you make this movie.
Yeah, sure.
No, it's that the dude. Okay, so a couple things. One, I want to read it because I want to read the black guy.
Yeah,
because
you don't fit the character.
You don't fit Michael Clark Duncan at all. Get the fuck out of my face.
You look all pretty and sweaty swinging a hammer in an anvil with all the heat.
Hey, Will Smith did too, and he played in Emancipation. He looked like a fuck slave. We could figure
might be able might be able to get Michael J. White though. He's, you know, he's
That's true, dude. And I've actually wanted to get him on the podcast. Actually, I've got his info, so I'm just gonna hit him up because that motherfucker's badass. That's no joke. That's Spawn, bro. We got to get him on the show. I was just thinking about like some of the things you were saying about the character stuff that you wrote, and I'm like thinking to myself, okay, what attracts an actor to a writer's character, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you were just pitching that. You were just talking about that as black people. Well, I'm thinking to myself, okay, I'm a black guy, and that just went through my head right when you were talking, and then you said something about, you know, they're the only black people in this town. And I was like, holy shit, I was the only black person that was at my school when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to an all-white school forever. I ended up being the quarterback there. And everybody was like, you got a nigger playing quarterback? And I'm like, yeah, I'm a fucking nigger playing quarterback. That's what I do. You know, but that's what happened. But I can relate to it. And I'm like, oh shit, I want to read this now. I want to read the black guy, bro. That's no joke. That's no joke. But see, okay, so when you grab a script and someone sends you something, or if you're writing something that you want to be in, do you do the same thing where you immediately go to something that you relate to, or is it something that you find interesting? I always want to know what like a true actor wants to do. Like I'm not like a real actor, but I'll act if I have to out of necessity. But I really want to play Bullseye, but I've done other parts where, you know, I just did it because I have to do it because we can't find anybody.
Sure.
Let's say you're writing your Dead West. Is there a specific character that you wrote for yourself, or are you wanting to do something different, or are you going to be in it at all if you end up making this?
I never actually wrote any characters with me in mind. I wrote a movie I wanted to see, and whether or not I ended up in it didn't really matter to me.
Okay.
Now, would I like to play some of the characters in it? Yeah, absolutely. If somebody else was casting it, would they cast me in that role? Probably not. But I mean, if I want to do something, it's because the character, like you were talking about, is really interesting to me and connects with me, or it's a character that I think would be really hard and really challenging to pull off and would take work. That's interesting to me too. Or it's just a movie that I want to be part of. Okay. Like
the Horrorverse.
Exactly. Like the Horrorverse. Like literally, if you guys had said, we'll have you walk on and say, oh my God, and get stabbed, I would have been perfectly happy with that.
Right.
Because you were doing fun stuff and I just wanted to be part of it, you know, help out and be in that kind of energy. But a lot of the times, it's either a character I really connect with or a role that like, man, I would love to be challenged by that, or on the flip side of that, challenge the audience by me playing that.
Okay.
So
it's interesting to me, because we all have our different paths, our different journeys that we take, and we are all doing it for our own reasons, right? And I think I've become accustomed to creating not only stuff that I want to entertain people with, like, you know, Chuck does the same thing, you know, Sam does the same thing. I'm sure you're doing it for that reason, but there's something about it that we have to get out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've become accustomed to like wanting to create my own opportunities, if that makes sense, to things that I want to do visually, you know, or writing wise, or even acting wise. Like I wrote Bullseye specific because I wanted to play that part. I love Snake Plissken. This is my thank you to Kurt Russell and John Carpenter. Mm-hmm. Like that's how I felt. And no one could tell me no. I don't care how much Sam ranks on me for putting the wig on. I don't give a fuck. I'm wearing it and I'm doing it. That is Snake. But you know what I mean? That's kind of why I do some of these things. And also for you guys, like when I write now, I used to write like you, where I had certain people in my mind, like these bigger actors. You know, I remember when I wrote the first novel, Chuck, who did I have for the main character? I had Eric Roberts at that time. He was like the best dude in the world. I had Eric Roberts in my head the whole time I was writing that novel. I did. But now I write because I know all these actors. I see them. I saw you, you know. That's why I reached out to you. Like when I was finishing writing Frank, I'm like, you know, Logan could probably do it. Logan could probably do it. And then when you did it better than I thought you would, I was like, Jesus Christ. You know, that's where I'm at now. So I think for you, honestly, where you're at, and now you're just getting really into this acting thing and filmmaking now and writing mm-hmm. stories, the more people you keep working with, the more people that you meet, I think you'll see that transition happen where you'll be like, yeah, Chuck could play that part. Or, you know, Ryan Smith, he could shoot that. Mm-hmm. You know, or Aaron, he could edit that. Or, you know, Olivia could play that part, no problem. You'll know who you need. And then you just reach out to him and say, hey, bro, what's up? You know what I mean? I think that's the cool journey that you'll go on in this, in on the level we're at right now, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what's fun about it. It becomes more of a reality right away once you start tapping into that. I went back and read Blackout again myself when I sent it to you guys because I was just like, I haven't touched that thing. I wasn't even going to make that anymore. And there's a couple ways I want.
Fucking COVID.
Yeah, I might make that movie, that script. I don't know if it's going to be a movie. I still have it in my head that I want to do like an audio thing with it. I don't know. You know, there's other podcasts I've listened to. And there was this one on fucking Spotify. It was a Batman that I listened to. And it's an audio story where they've got sound effects and they've got the actor doing voiceovers and it flows like it's just like an audiobook. You're just listening. You're like, dude, this is badass. It was fantastic. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Blackout would be great for that. But, you know, anything you could do in that format too. So I was thinking to myself, God, that'd be easy. We could just get a lot of voice actors come in and do some voice work. We could sit down. I could edit it all together, put a lot of sound effects and ambiance in there, and we could tell the story just audio. And that would be fun. But
I mean, it's tough with, you know, a phone call. There's radio conversations throughout the whole script. Like it's great as an audio thing. You're completely right on with that.
I'm feeling that. And then you're not talking big budget. Oh, you need a sound effect. You want a gunfight? Yeah, throw some gunfights in there. You can do anything you want.
We happen to have a library of about 5,867 sound effects.
I got enough shit. So, you know, there's ways to create your story and tell it is what I'm getting to. And that's what's cool. And I think, doing your story from what I'm hearing from Chuck and what he pitched me to when he was reading, because he told me a few things about the preacher and stuff. And I'm like, okay, that's badass. Okay,
I said, did you start reading this? Yeah. No, man, I got stuck in fucking meetings all day.
I'm like, I was fucking dude. Yeah, I was teleworking today too. I could telework tomorrow too. I might be able to read it tomorrow, but today was fucked. I'm so mad.
I don't know what you're talking about. You'll be on the clock doing your job, doing your due diligence.
They don't listen.
You're a responsible human being.
And if they do listen to Sean,
hi, Susie, we love you.
But yeah, that's there's so many ways to tell these things and make them. But the writing aspect of it is my favorite part because you don't need anybody, Logan. It's just you if you're writing your own thing. It's just you, bro.
Yeah. That's very true.
Cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah. When you're writing, before we end the show, where are we at? Oh, shit, we're over an hour already. When you're writing, though, tell me this. Like, everybody's got their way of doing it. You know, do you need a quiet room? Do you need that fire going? Do you need that little nip? What are they do in Misery? What are the things you need? You need that one cigarette. You know,
that was when he was done.
No, when he was done, that's right.
Yeah. He was always tapping the cigarette. That was one packed fucking cigarette because he's always tapping it.
For Californication, he finishes. He has to have whiskey, weed, and Warren Zevon.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. What is your environment so that everybody can picture where is that when he's
writing? So, oddly enough, for the scenes that I'm really excited about, a lot of the times I'll put on a movie that I've seen 100 times that I love, like Tombstone, and I'll just rock through the scenes I'm really excited about with the movie going in the background and just like amping me up.
Badass.
And, you know, when I'm doing that, I can write 20, 30 pages, you know, in an hour, no problem. Mm-hmm. And then other times I will need like a quiet room, no distractions, and I'll get half a page done of like the boring in between stuff that I don't care about.
Right.
But to get through that stuff, I can't have the distraction because I'm not excited about that scene necessarily.
Yep.
So I'll just start watching the movie instead of writing the script.
Right.
So I kind of do both. So if I'm really amped about it, I like to have like good music on or a movie or something, but something that I already know by heart. So it's the movie becomes like a soundtrack to me at that point. Whereas if I really have to think about it and work through, you know, the characters and the motivations and stuff, I will take a quiet room, a lot of the times I'll have, you know, either a cup of coffee or maybe bourbon or something, and just think and sip and type slowly, delete the line 16 times, and then the 17th time I'm like, oh, that's it. That's the line.
That's or that's the one it gets.
Yeah.
Good stuff. It's great. It's great. Well, I'm super happy that you're doing it, and I got to read it. I'm going to read it this weekend. I'll bust it out. What's it like? 75 pages, something like that.
Yeah.
I'll knock that out. No problem. I might do it tomorrow. We'll see how my day goes, because I want to read it now. Really good. That's really good.
My problem is I overread. I overread it like I'm planning the fucking shoot.
Just read while I'm reading. Just enjoy the story.
I do the same thing with fucking books. It took me three times as long to read a book. Aaron and I were reading Dean Koontz at the same time back in 1998.
Yeah.
That motherfucker read three books in a weekend, and I'm still sitting on the first book because I'm reading a chapter before I go to bed. And I was like, yeah, I see Kevin Bacon playing this character. And I even see, I got a specific dog for the dog that actually, you know, you get to hear the dog's thoughts.
It's like the crane shot here.
Yeah. I didn't think of it back then. I didn't think of it like crane shots. I wasn't so much into movie making as I was as following the story.
Sure.
I do the same thing, you know. It's like, you know, my notes for you, I'll send you the red tagged version of your spell check. That'd be it for me. But other than that, no, I dive too deep when I read, so it takes me forever to do a script.
It takes you a minute. Yeah. I didn't know you did all that. That's funny. Yeah. It makes sense, though. That's how your brain works, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I overanalyze everything.
Yeah, you do. You do. Yeah, I just enjoy it for what it is. I'll just do it a quick read through, and then if I know it's getting serious, or if Logan was like, "Hey, I need you to help me make this movie," then I'll start digging in. But the first time, I'm just going to enjoy it for what it is. That's why I watch movies over, because every time I start diving into other things, the first time is always just like the experience. You know, I just want to experience it. After that, I start going, "Let me watch this for the cinematography this time. I'm really going to pay attention to the shots," and then I'll watch it again and just listen to it. Hard, like dialogue wise or audio wise or sound design wise, and I'll watch it again another time, and I'll watch it for a certain actor and just watch what they did. You know, I can get something out of multiple viewings of the film.
Drives other people in our lives insane.
Yeah, everybody hates it. She can't stand it. She's like, I can't believe you're watching that fucking movie again. I'm like,
yeah,
you can't watch Die Hard.
I've only seen it 7 times. I need to get to at least 15.
You know what I mean? Ah, it's funny.
All
right.
One of the worst things when you become a filmmaker is watching movies. You all of a sudden you're paying attention to the shots. You're paying attention to the angles. You're paying attention to continuity. You're paying attention. Yeah. I think the first time I was watching Jurassic World Part 2.
Okay.
And we were just getting through, I think it was Outrider.
Okay.
And I'm sitting there, I text Aaron from the movie theater. I was like, you fucking ruined movies for me, thanks. So I'm sitting here watching the shot, and I was like, you know, the lighting doesn't quite blend right when it comes back the other way.
It's funny. Sorry. Yeah, I do that sometimes. Yep. Sam, and now Sam picks up on it too when she's watching some. We'll be sitting there watching a movie, and she goes, that's a pretty shot. I'm like, oh, look at you. That's a good shot right there. Yeah. All right, so you were up here too, Logan, before we end the show. You were up here. You filmed another little short film with Ryan Smith. He's a buddy of ours. Ask. You were fantastic in that, dude. You made me laugh my ass off. I fucking loved it. That was one of the funnest things, watching you in that, because we had just got done filming Horrorverse.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, shit. You were like 3 blocks away from the house. I don't live that far away from Ryan. We live really close.
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. I'm right down the block. It's 5 minutes away from here. And that was funny. I was like, oh, shit, he was in Ryan's backyard, bro. That's no joke. Coming right under the deck. You were right under the deck where Hammer was looking for the fucking puzzle box from Hellraiser. That's where we filmed it at. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Ryan Smith's a genius. He comes up with some really cool stuff.
Especially, that was great. It was fun to work with.
Yeah, so. Practically. He's a hell of a funny guy. Only thing about him that I can't stand is he shits his pants on set all night. He won't stop farting. Ryan cannot stop farting, and he does not care.
Oops, sorry.
All night long.
Did you hear that? No. Do you smell it, fucker?
No, Ryan Smith. Yo, Ryan Smith. No, he's great. I'm glad you got to work with him. I think he's brilliant. I hate it that he has his own little company that he's working on, because I love his eye. He's got a great eye on a camera, and he's helped us. You know, he filmed the first piece of the Horrorverse, episode 9, the one you're in, he helped shoot that opening sequence with Voorhees. He helped on episode 8, I think it was. And he might have done a... Did he do anything else? I don't think he did. I think he did 8.
He was second camera for Hammer, wasn't he? Wasn't he second camera on Hammer when we had everybody here?
I've seen his name in the Horrorverse a couple of times. Tyler Darko, too.
Yeah, Tyler's great. Yeah, both those guys, they have a run-and-gun mentality like I do. They shoot like that. I like people that shoot and don't need a lot of time to set up. Just grab your fucking camera. Let's film some shit, you know? I like that. It saves time, and it also is very creative. When Ryan was helping us with the Shape movie, I mean, he shot some great stuff. And Ryan's like, where you want me? And I'm like, dude, do you, Ryan. Go. Just go film some shit. Because I don't know what he sees, you know?
Mm-hmm. Just go, don't get me in the shot, but go film something.
But you know what? He finds the best shots out of nowhere. And I'm like, you just organically do you. I don't give a fuck. I'm not that guy. Go be Ryan Smith. Just help me shoot some shit. That's where I'm at. And he would bring me back stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, that's brilliant, Ryan. Thank you. Thank you, bro.
Yeah. One of my favorite shots in the Shape of me, Blaine Michael, was him in the car shooting up at me as I was choking out.
From the backseat of the car shot. Yeah. That right in the first set.
And I'm sitting there, I'm like, why is the car getting all foggy? And I'm like, what the fuck? And then all of a sudden Ryan just rolls out of the car. He's like, man, that was great.
Yeah, it was a great shot. I had no idea he was even in the car, Logan. I had no idea Ryan was there. I was looking around for Ryan and I'm like, where the fuck did he go? He's in the fucking car. Brilliant. That's the
title
kind of
DP/Ninja.
Yes. It's fun. It's fun.
Well, chapter 3, we get done shooting all the ambulance, the police, everything, the big opening shot that we did and all that stuff. And we're sitting there. We all get together to get one big shot of everybody at the end. And you see it in the behind-the-scenes credit. He's over there taking a video of all of us doing that. And he's like, oh, I missed the crew shot. Yeah, you got to show up, motherfucker. Yeah, get over here.
Yeah, he missed. Anyway, fun stuff, man. Fun stuff. I'm glad you got to work with him. He's a good dude. All right. Well, what else you got lined up, Logan?
What you got going on?
Well, I got, I don't know, 4 or 5 films coming up, some short films, one feature coming up this year. So just a lot of stuff. All of it's kind of hush hush. Don't mention the titles yet. So, but, you know, look for me in film because I'll be there.
Badass. That's badass.
Are you working locally?
I am working locally, yes. They are all going to be between Seattle and Portland, various places.
Pacific Northwest is on fire, y'all.
It is. There's a lot of good movies coming
out. Which is funny because it rains like fuck up here.
Yeah. A lot of good filmmakers up here, a lot of good talent. And everybody's starting to show it right now. I think we inspired them, though, and I'm going to say that right fucking now. And I don't give a fuck what anybody says. I know we did. I know we did. And I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Good for them. Thank you, Logan.
Thank you.
We appreciate you very much. We'll be back on set soon, bro.
Awesome.
Yeah, we will. Yeah. Yeah, and you're part of the family. Like Sam would say right now. That's what she would say. You're part of the family, you know you're gonna be here. Right. You will be. All right. Good conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chuck, you wanna do your thing?
And Cam, thank you for joining us today on Around the Real. Thank you for hanging out for a cup of bourbon and a conversation and a martini. Extra dirty, lots of salt because he's weird. But it's okay because his blood pressure is nothing to be concerned about because he never checks it. But moving forward, Logan Cannon, an amazing actor, a very good writer so far. I don't know. I haven't gotten all the way through the script. After I finish it off, I'll follow up. When we post this podcast, I'll tag it and be like, and a good writer. Right now, he's doing pretty good, but, you know, I'll see how the story finishes off. But, Logan, my friend, it's always a pleasure to have you around on set in our lives because you bring everything you are to what you do. Whether you're acting or just being an amazing human being, thank you for who you are. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for sharing your talents with us. And thank you for always hanging out. And remember, everybody out there, think hard because you're thinking anyway.
We'll see everybody later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Logan.
For those of you that want to be a guest on Around the Reel, please email Sam at aroundthereel253@gmail.com.
That's aroundthereel253@gmail.com.
Not Messenger. Do not message Aaron on Messenger because then he has to send you a message that says email Sam at aroundthereel253@gmail.com.
That's aroundthereel253@gmail.com. How come they can't just... message me again?
Because nobody wants to fucking talk to you.
Can anybody reach out? That's an artist, filmmaker, actor.
If you're an artist of any kind, we want to hear from you.
But we are going to vet the crap out of you.
We don't care if you make millions of dollars in Hollywood or if you're just beginning your career in the art industry. We don't care. So everybody that wants to be on Around the Reel, yes, we want you.
That's aroundthereel253@gmail.com.
This week's episode is brought to you by Entrepreneur Swag Shop. As business owners, it's important that we create the right environment and surround ourselves with the right people and the right things to keep you focused and motivated.
Entrepreneur Swag Shop offers clothing and accessories designed to empower entrepreneurs to share their message, their beliefs, and their journey with the world. Through inspiration and identity, the powerful messages printed on the items will help align you with who you want to be and what you want to achieve.
Whether you are new or experienced, male or female, young or old, you'll absolutely find a message that resonates with you. Visit EntrepreneurSwagShop.com and use code AROUNDTHEREEL during checkout to get 10% off your order today.
Get that swag, people.